Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 30th, 2019. President Salva Kiir calls on South Sudanese to unite on this matters day.
I invite all our citizens to answer our call for peace and to join us in our efforts to discover our liberation path and to seek and pursue the core objectives of our liberation struggle.
And the country's first vice president tells police officers to be professionals.
You are the government, and wherever you go, you represent the president and you represent the whole government. So you must be disciplined. You should know that you are serving the nation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese are remembering their compatriots who died in the fight for independence by lighting candles. Today is also the day when South Sudan's founding father, John Garang Dimabior, was killed in an helicopter crash 14 years ago. While addressing South Sudanese in Juba today on Matters Day, President Salva Kiir says South Sudanese have failed to unite under one flag after gaining independence 8 years ago. The president is calling on South Sudanese to embrace peace. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Addressing hundreds of Juba residents at the Dr. John Garang Museum this afternoon, President Kiir told the crowd he is humbled by the sacrifices made by the country's fallen heroes and heroines, but says South Sudanese have fallen short of living up to the expectations for which millions have shed their blood.
Unfortunately, we got distracted from pursuing this path and got bemused into petty politics, power struggle, and the pursuit of rents from the state. I owe it to my fallen comrades and to the people of South Sudan to redirect our country towards the achievement of this objective.
President Kiir gave medals of honor to more than 100 members of the SPLA who died during the liberation struggle, including 12 members of the Political and Military Council headed by Dr. John Garang, the founder of the SPLM and SPLA. He says South Sudan's current state of affairs is not good, but there is a way forward to get the country back on track.
The first stage was to wage an armed struggle for a total liberation of our country. And thanks to the millions of our martyrs, the Republic of South Sudan was born 8 years ago. And we are extremely proud of this achievement. Many have started the quest for freedom, and a few have succeeded. The second stage of our struggle is to consolidate the unity of our people, liberate them from abject poverty, illiteracy, and ignorance, and ultimately restore their dignity and worth.
The president assured citizens that brighter days lay ahead, but there must be a change of attitude in order to live to the objective of the liberation struggle.
I invite all our citizens within the country and outside to answer our call for peace and to join us in our efforts to discover our liberation path and to seek and pursue the core objectives of our liberation struggle. We cannot rest in our chairs just because we have achieved liberation stage one. Our liberation struggle cannot be declared complete until we have achieved the second and the third stages. My surviving comrades and I have the duty to show you the way.
Hundreds of participants lit candles in remembrance of the sacrifices of the hundreds of thousands of men, women and children who died during South Sudan's struggle for independence. An estimated 400,000 people died during the country's five-year civil war that began in late 2013. Dimo Silva Aurelio, VOA News, Juba.
South Sudan's first vice president told hundreds of new police officers at their graduation ceremony yesterday to focus on fighting crime and protect the lives and property of South Sudanese citizens in rural and urban areas. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan police officers have been in the spotlight recently, specifically traffic police officers who arrest drivers and traders and extort money. During a debate in Parliament last month about police misconduct, some lawmakers called corrupt traffic police officers a disgrace and a shame to the country's image and questioned the criteria used to hire them. And 3 days ago, Traffic Police Director General Major General Kony John Akut told a Juba radio station that 85 Juba officers had been detained over abuses against motorists. Speaking in Arabic yesterday at a graduation ceremony at Police Operations Headquarters in Juba, First Vice President Taban Dengai told 420 new officers they have a social contract with civilians, a contract they must respect.
Your job is to protect the lives of civilians and their properties. And for your information, you are not doing this job for free. The citizens hired you. The citizens have employed you and you are being paid for this service. In return for this, you should not sleep at night.
Deng acknowledged that some police officers engage in illegal activities such as demanding bribes from citizens for doing their job.
You are the government and wherever you go, you represent the president and you represent the whole government. So you must be disciplined. You should know that you are serving the nation.
Deng says it is the role of police to fight crime everywhere, including rural areas where it may be difficult to apprehend criminals.
You must go and stop cattle rustling. You must go and stop child abduction so that our people live in peace in their villages. The army will go and help you in the disarmament of the civilian.
Deng says the time has come for government to enforce the law and give civilians the security they deserve. Speaking in Arabic, Michael Chengjek, South Sudan Interior Minister, warns officers not to allow their tribal affiliations to affect the way they treat citizens when sorting out disputes.
If your brother or your mother or your wife has an issue with another person and you are the one doing investigation, please don't turn the investigation against that person who is not your relative. Let your relative who is a criminal go to the prison according to the law.
Chengjek says police officers must be honest and transparent to all South Sudanese at all times. The 420 officers who were graduated yesterday will be dispatched all over the country in the next few days. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch is calling on authorities in South Sudan to release 6 Juba airport officials arrested by the National Security in 2018. Human Rights Associate Director for Africa, Jehan Henry, says one of the airport officials, David Subek Dada, who is in his 50s, needs medical attention. Henry says the continued detention of the 6 airport officials violates the constitution of South Sudan.
This is a case of individuals who were arrested last November in connection with some dispute involving landing fees with a Kenyan Airways Flight 540. But the issue isn't the underlying case. The issue is the fact that they have been detained for so long without any charges. And they were arrested in November of 2018 by the National Security Service at different times, and they were held there for many months. More recently, they have been transferred to the general prison, the Juba prison. But all this time, they have not been taken to court. One of them has serious health problems and hasn't been getting adequate health treatment. And so these cases, we decided to bring them to the attention of the public, not only because these individuals have rights that have been violated and they should be either charged or released on bail or basically allowed they should be charged or released.
Last week, you also put out a statement regarding the editor-in-chief of Al-Watan Arabic Daily newspaper, who was picked by the National Security when he went to inquire why he was blocked from traveling to Nairobi. Do you have any updates about Christopher?
Two commonalities. One is the fact that it's national security agents who have been detaining and harassing journalists linked to, you know, the content of what they publish. This is a form of restriction on freedom of expression. But the other issue is that when they are detained, again, without charges, without legal process. So the case of Christopher is another illustration. Over the years, we collect dozens of cases. Dozens of such cases come to our attention on a regular basis. The problem of national security detaining people, either preventing them from travel, taking their passports, or in other cases, we've had activists who were picked up in other countries, in Kenya or in Uganda, and then transported back into South Sudan without any legal process. So this is all part of a puzzle here that we're seeing of unlawful detention.
These reports of arbitrary arrests in South Sudan have become an issue with the international community. What is really the end game here? How is this going to be solved?
Well, one of the recommendations we should be taking up the reform of the National Security Act, and as a matter of urgency. The Act does not include some of the protections that it should, and so reforming that law is one piece of the puzzle. But otherwise, we think by shedding light on these cases, we may be able to show why the authorities and convince authorities to do the right thing in these cases.
Is there any statistics of people arbitrarily arrested in South Sudan? I mean, it's not easy to get these numbers.
Well, for national security in the Blue House alone, we think that there are still dozens. But that's not, we do not have statistics. I will say that the regular prison system, the criminal justice system, the regular general prison, they are keeping statistics, and we did do some in-depth research on how that system was working back in 2012, and we were able to provide a lot of numbers of inmates. We talked about overcrowding and various aspects of the system. For national security, it's totally different. There's no transparency. National security doesn't even want people to come close to the premises. They mark the premises. There are secret detention locations scattered all over town in residential homes and other places.
That's Jehan Henry, Human Rights Watch Associate Director for Africa. She was speaking with me via WhatsApp from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Families of protesters in Sudan say they are investigating reports of their missing loved ones. More on that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle a friend who dismisses your opinions?
Most of the time I just leave them, because I would rather not argue with a person. I would rather just leave them and stick to their ideas, and I'll stick to mine.
If I know the opinions I'm giving out to my friend, they are productive and they are of help, I persist till when I see that they pick out value out of the opinions I'm giving them.
Definitely, if I'm giving you my opinion, I care. So if you dismiss my opinion, I just notice I just don't need to care for you like I am trying to.
I just obey his opinion. I believe that when he has a right to dismiss my opinion, and I do respect whatever he comes up with.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about malaria. Most of the drugs used to treat malaria is becoming ineffective in parts of Southeast Asia, and that could lead to global health emergency. Researchers from Thailand's Methol University and Britain's Oxford University say parasites that carry malaria are developing resistance to a key drug combination across multiple regions of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Henry Ridgewell reports from Washington.
The report warns that the parasite Plasmodium falciparum, which causes the most lethal form of human malaria, is becoming resistant to the first choice drug, DHA piperaquine, in parts of Southeast Asia, with patients seeing a failure rate of 50% or more. The situation is so critical that scientists say the treatment should not be used in Cambodia, Vietnam, and northeast Thailand because it is ineffective and contributes to increased malaria transmission. New treatments must be considered, says Sturgios Mostios of the University of Northumbria.
It might be opportune at this point in time to explore whether or not we should bring together different new classes of medications so that when the problem starts becoming more substantial, there is a solution, potentially, that works at the multi-drug level.
The report says urgent action is now needed to eliminate falciparum malaria from the region. Otherwise, the resistant strains of the parasite could further spread to other parts of Asia and Africa, potentially causing a global health emergency.
All it takes is a ship with infected individuals or a pool of water where the mosquitoes are getting into Africa, and then slowly that parasite establishing a foothold. The likely scenario, however, will be that improvement of healthcare on a day-to-day basis in Africa will create the opportunity for the parasite to evolve resistance.
Currently, malaria vaccine trials are underway in several African countries, but drug combinations like DHA piperaquine remain vital in treating malaria, especially in countries with poor health systems. Since 2014, global progress against malaria has stalled. There were an estimated 219 million cases and 435,000 related deaths in 2017, most of them children under the age of 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Families that lost loved ones during a crackdown on protesters by Sudanese security forces last month in Khartoum dispute findings of an investigation by military leaders. The country's military leaders appointed a fact-finding committee to investigate killings and rapes that occurred on June 3rd. Some family members whose relatives were killed described the report as inaccurate and incomplete. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese public prosecutor Fathar Rahman Said, who led the committee, released the report over the weekend, which said 8 soldiers were not obeying orders when they killed 87 protesters and injured 168 others. The report did not provide the names of the individual soldiers responsible for the killings, only their initials. It also said there was no evidence rapes occurred during the crackdown. The mother of 26-year-old Abdusalam Kisha, who was killed during the sit-in, says the family was shocked to hear Kisha was dead. Speaking in Arabic, Amna Muhammad Buhari says her family is still suffering from the trauma caused by his death, but are proud that Kisha died while fighting for a good and better Sudan.
Since the beginning of the protests in Khartoum on 19 December, he has never missed being on the streets.
He has even been shot at with tear gas on his right leg. Another time the tear gas fell on his face, causing damage on his face. Despite this, he continued to take part in the protest. He never spent a night at home here since the sit-in began.
Abdusalam Kisha's younger brother, 23-year-old Murtada Kisha, calls the report misleading because it fails to mention several facts about the violence. Speaking in Arabic, he says, 2 months later, dozens of protesters are still missing.
Many people have been killed even some 2 days ago. They are still fishing bodies from the River Nile near the Tuti Island. We are not yet done with the counting. Why should they lie to the Sudanese people? From now, we are not afraid again. We will continue protesting on the streets till we see a civilian's government formed in this country.
Speaking in Arabic, Abdusalam's father, Kisha Abdusalam, says his son was a friend and a colleague to him before he became a father.
Sadiq Uzamil.
These are simple descriptions that I can use to describe him, so you can imagine the gap that he has left behind at home. Other families are missing a son, but for me, I'm missing a friend, a colleague, and a son altogether.
A member of the Sudanese Families of Victims Association, Abdusalam, says the group has registered 247 people killed and more than 700 people injured during the crackdown at the sit-in site on June 3rd. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Dar es Salaam, where police have confirmed they are holding investigative journalist Eric Kibandera for questioning regarding his citizenship. Dar es Salaam Police Commander Lazarus Mambasa told reporters Kibandera was arrested after failing to report to the police station regarding his citizenship. His arrest was widely reported as an abduction Monday after police initially said they had no information on his whereabouts. Hours later, police confirmed the journalist was in custody. Kibandera writes for local and international newspapers. His family tells VOA's Swahili service he was born in Tanzania in 1980. Kibandera went to the University of Dar es Salaam and has lived in the country all his life. Mutoki Mumo, the Sub-Saharan Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists, describes Kibandera's arrest.
Okay, so for us, this whole issue has been very irregular and very unclear from the beginning. And the reports that we received yesterday about how the people that came to arrest him didn't properly identify himself, and also the information that came to us from colleagues and other journalists who went around Dar es Salaam to look for him yesterday just pointed out to a very murky picture. So today afternoon, Tanzanian police gave a press statement where they said that they're holding him and they're questioning him on his citizenship status. And then again, this raises a lot of questions. And on the face of it, it seems to me like a way to justify what happened yesterday, a way to justify something that was done irregularly for several reasons. And the first reason is we've asked whether this is something that's coming out of the blue. It's actually not the first time we've seen him being accused, being having his citizenship status questioned. In 2013, according to local media reports, his citizenship status was investigated, and he later wrote an article in which he said that he believed that these questions were connected to his critical work as a journalist. And the government in 2013 did later dismiss the entire process and say that his citizenship and that of his friends were not in question. So that's the first reason. And then if you again look at the way there was just a lack of clear information yesterday about where he was, that some of the same people who were speaking today and saying that we do actually have him were approached yesterday by journalists and denied that they had him, all points to this question of citizenship being a way to justify something else. Now, what that something else is, again, is not completely clear. The people that we've spoken to say that they believe it could be connected to some of the journalism he's been doing recently. Some of his most recently published work has analyzed internal ruling party politics in Tanzania. And if you look at his history of journalism in general, he has been unflinching in criticizing power where it was needed.
Now, another journalist went missing about 2 years ago, Mr. Azory Gwanda. Is there any link between these two cases that anyone has been able to confirm?
No link has been confirmed, and we certainly haven't made such a link. But what we have seen is that what we do think is that both cases raise serious questions about the safety of journalists in Tanzania and press freedom in Tanzania. And both cases also call for credible accounting from the government, and they call for accountability on the part of whomever is involved in irregularly taking away journalists and compromising their safety and making it, sending fear to the Tanzanian media state.
That's Muthoki Mumo with the Committee for Protecting Journalists, speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson from Nairobi earlier today.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you're listening from Bor, Yei, and Yambio, please drop us a line on our WhatsApp number. The number is 202-630-8011. That's our show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with the song Ya Diktor by Emmanuel Lasso. Listening to Emmanuel Lasso with the song Ya Diktor. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.